not the same time of an hour.
Okay. Hello, everyone. This is the Atlanta Urantia Study Group. I'm Dr. Roger Paul, and this is Sunday, October 28th, 2012. And tonight we're going to study Paper 49, The Inhabited Worlds, and that starts on page 559. Okay, and let's say a little prayer and we'll get started. George, would you like to pray for us tonight again?
Sure.
Okay, let's say a little prayer and we'll start.
Okay. Dear Michael of Nevada, we here on Urantia pause in our busy day to acknowledge you as the creator of this local universe. We send greetings to all those who are on Salvation, Universal, even to Paradise. We ask you that you will be with us now and help us in our understanding. Help us to understand what we read, and that we will get the real value from what is here in this paper. Read us in a special way and continue to be close to us in our daily lives. We pray. Amen.
Amen. Okay. I was nice.
Break to the mic like this. Don't break either.
Okay. Anybody see that stop, please let me know and I'll restart it for you. The Inhabited Worlds. I start reading tonight. I haven't read in a long time. If I can get my glasses to work. Okay. Paper 49, The Inhabited Worlds. All mortal inhabited worlds are evolutionary in origin and nature. These spheres are the spawning ground, the evolutionary cradle of the mortal races of time and space. Each unit of the ascendant life is a veritable training school for the stage of existence just ahead. And this is true of every stage of man's progressive paradise ascent, just as true of the initial mortal experience on an evolutionary planet as of the final universe headquarters schools of the Melchizedeks, a school which is not attended by ascending mortals until just before their translation into the regime of the super universe and the attainment of first stage spirit existence. Okay, let's talk about this first paragraph a little bit before we go on. Does everybody understand what they're talking about here, this regime, the first stage spirit experience? Or do we need a little explanation on that? Yeah, okay. What happens is when you get to the mansion worlds, you go through the seven mansion worlds, and before you are translated into what they call the super universe or the local universe experience, into closer to a spirit stage rather than a Urantia stage. This is what they're talking about. And at that time, you go through the Melchizedek schools and they train you and prepare you for what's to come, basically. And this is part of the normal evolutionary process for all the worlds throughout all eternity. Okay, so in essence, all worlds, when you die on any world, it doesn't matter which of the seven super universes or wherever it is, all of them goes through the same process of going to something similar to the mansion worlds. They go into a Urantia type being. So it doesn't matter if you're in this super universe or one on way on the other side, totally different super universe, they have the same experience as we do. Okay? All inhabited worlds are basically grouped for celestial administration into the local systems. And each of these local systems is limited to about 1,000 evolutionary worlds. This limitation is by the degree of the Ancients of Days, and it pertains to actual evolutionary planets wherein mortals of survival status are living. Neither worlds finally settled in light and life, nor planets in pre-human stage of life development are reckoned in this group. We got to explain a lot. This paper. okay, the Ancients of Days. Does everybody know what the Ancients of Days are? Yeah. Okay, the Ancients of Days is our basic governing group that determines whether we survive past this life. Okay, they're our judgment corps, in essence. Okay, so when you die, your guardian angel appears before the Ancients of Days and justifies your life. In other words, tells them whether you have anything salvageable in your life. And if you have anything whatsoever salvageable, and with the possibility that you'll go on for eternal life, then you're passed on to the ministry worlds, basically. And that's what the ancients are facing. They're our judgment department of the universe.
And if I understand right, if you don't pass, it goes to the higher than ancients.
Well, the ancients of days is the highest. Yes. It's the highest one.
It goes all the way to the paradise.
No, that they are from paradise. The ancients of days are in Uversa, but they are direct descendants from paradise, of the seven master spirits.
They're the ones who judge us.
They're the ones that judge us. Yeah.
And they decide whether we get to live or not.
That's right. Now, and an interesting part about this too, we studied last month, I think it was, that if you have nothing salvageable in your life, in other words, you have determined you don't want to go on past this life, then the guardian angel has to make an appearance before the Ancients of Days, but your thought adjuster does not. Yeah. But your thought adjuster doesn't have to justify any of his actions, because that's God the Father, right?
Right.
But the guardian angel has to justify what they have done as to why you did not survive. Okay, because they're there to help us.
So there's a record of your soul is rendered to non-existent?
Yeah, there's a
record. There is a record of it.
There is a record anyway, because if you go into non-existence, all your experience becomes the property of the thought adjuster, for one, and that experience passes on to the next person that thought adjuster goes into. So God didn't lose nothing. And it goes into the Supreme, part of the Supreme Being. And so those experiences are really never lost, it's just your personality is lost. Okay, you have no consciousness of being.
You've
never been born, basically. As if you never existed. Okay. And then the world's finally settled in life and life, nor planets in the pre-human existence stage. When we get to a certain point of existence, and after we've probably had a clonal son and that sort of thing, when we get more to a spiritual stage and we go in the age of the light and life, then we're as close to perfect on this planet as you can be. They say those are not counted in this count of 1,000 worlds, okay, because they're closer to perfect. Also, the world that have our pre-human stage of developing life. In other words, everything is evolutionary. And if they're at the point where they have no human beings that's made a choice or has a concept of deity, then they're considered pre-human. They're not human yet until they make one individual on that planet makes a non-selfish choice or a moral choice. And at that point, they become human beings. And then they're registered as planets. Up to that point, they're just...
Yeah, then they said that Ethan, Adam and Eve.
Yeah, it takes about 500,000 years.
That's when you start getting thought
adjusters. Yeah.
Yeah, the first day that actually goes on all registered as a sentient planet.
A sentient planet, that's right. Now, our first one was
Andon
and Fonda. Yeah, that was the first human on our planet. Mm-hmm. And that was 900,000 years ago. Right. So,
there's speaking of the Ancients of Days, they're part of what they call the God the Sevenfold or the Sevenfold approach to finding God. And it starts with the Paradise Creator Sons, you know, Michael,
right,
or Jesus.
For us.
For everyone.
I thought Michael is only for our superior.
No, there's a order of Michael. It's an order of Michael.
We have our own, but
so
you
were talking about order of Michael, not the Michael who is our God.
Right. Michael's always is only of Salvation. Okay.
Right.
But he's the order of Michael.
He's part of the order of Michael.
Yeah, he's the only begotten Son of God in our local universe.
In our global universe.
Right.
Well, he created global universe.
Right, but he's part of the hierarchy. If you think of the hierarchy, right, you go from the Creator Son to the
Ancients of Days. There's one for each super universe.
Then
the Supreme Being.
Then
you have the Trinity after that.
And the Trinity, the Son of God, is part of that Trinity. So if you think of the Son of God, the part of the Trinity, Michael's really a direct descendant from the Son of God.
Absolutely. But there is many orders of Son of God.
There's three different orders of sonship. Right, yeah.
Michaels, Emmanuels, and...
Abominals, and Magisterial.
There sons. You go. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. The three types yeah. of sons. Yeah. Right.
And that is... Nobody say how many of those are.
There are. Yeah, it does say how many Michael sons are. There's
700,000
in the universe, and there's...
In operation.
Give or take a few.
Take a few. And I think it's over a million because they think that no one knows for sure, but they think they're being prepared for the outer space levels. Yeah. So there's more than 700,000.
Well, because
700,000 active ones.
They gotta still create a lot of galaxies.
Right, so. But constantly. Yeah. Now this seems like a lot. I know.
No, I'm good.
All right, let's keep going. Satania itself is an unfinished system containing only 619 inhabited worlds. Such planets are numbered serially and according to their registration as inhabited worlds, as worlds inhabited by willed creatures. Thus was Urantia given the number 606 of Satania, meaning the 606th world of this local system on which the long evolutionary life process culminated in the appearance of human beings. There are 36 uninhabited planets nearing the life endowment stage, and several are now being made ready for the life carriers. There are nearly 200 spheres which are involved so as to be ready for life implantation within the next few million years. Now, the life carriers are the ones that actually implant life on the planet. Right?
That's their idea of 36 planets nearing the
life. Nearing the life, yeah.
Within a few million years.
A few million
that's years. Really, really close.
Yeah. So that's getting close.
A few million years.
Yeah. What's a few million among friends, right?
Well, in standard, it's 606.
606, right. You know, and it makes me wonder, you know, if the references to 666 in the New Testament was really 606 and they transposed it or something, you know. Not all planets are suited to harbor mortal life. Small ones having a high rate of axial rotation are wholly unsuitable for life habitants. In several of the physical systems of Satania, the planets revolving around the central sun are too large for inhabitation. Their great mass, occasionally oppressive gravity. Many of these enormous spheres have satellites, sometimes have a half a dozen or more, and these moons are often in size very near to that of Urantia, and so they are almost ideal for habitation.
Makes you wonder about the planets in our system.
Jupiter is a good example of that. It's got several moons that are roughly the size of Earth.
And one of those is number 605.
Or how about the satellites around Mars, even? You know, there's satellites around Mars that are about the size of our planet.
Atmosphere.
But
don't have atmosphere.
No, but no, not yet. But see, that we're talking about millions
for the
of years.
Non-breathers.
Yeah, it may not be an issue.
Well, they say Jupiter is going to shrink down to smallest atmospheres, mainly gases right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what about planets which they're in different dimensions? And
they got a whole.
They may have.
And then we have the what's the ones in the outer space levels? I can't think.
Just like Urantia, it's very close to us, but we cannot see it. Because
the Absinite worlds, we have no concept of what that could be.
Yeah,
that could be on another dimension.
And they may be right next door.
Well, there are a lot of beings around here.
If you think about it, this planet is probably populated like we can't even conceive because there's lots of celestial beings we don't. They're outside our sight range. So.
I think you're paranoid to think about it too much.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this before. If we're all on the third psychic level, exploring God, that means that we each have two guardian seraphim assigned to us and two cherubim. So one of them's on duty all the time. So that means we have up to four angels for each person here. So any two of those are on duty all the time. So we've got about three times the beings in this room that's actually here.
So wait a minute now. You said that we're at what level?
We're probably at about the third psychic level. Okay.
And how did you figure that out?
A progressive. Well, when you get to the point where you're searching for God, okay, you get a certain level in your life, and by wanting to do God's will, that automatically puts you up on levels. The more you want to do God's will, the higher level you get, and your experience has a lot to do with that too. But I really believe people who try to discover this book are serious about their relationship with God.
Absolutely.
You know, because you don't take on this hefty of a job unless you're serious about loving God the Father and wanting to do His will. You know, so I figure probably most of the people in these Urantia meetings are probably at least up to about the third psychic level. And if that's the case, you've been assigned two seraphim and two cherubim, or a seraphim and a man, you know.
Where can I read about these levels?
Is it in here?
Yeah.
Is it here?
We just
went over. It's in the paper right before the one we studied this week.
Okay.
It's in all. It explains all of that.
Okay.
Yeah. If you need help with it, call me.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. I will.
But if I remember right, also it says who is executing the knowledge of God.
That's right.
He's got a lot more stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's
he can have a 12th.
Yeah.
And they're always in twos.
Well, there's a whole core here on this planet.
That's right. You know, whole core. Yeah. So, for instance, in your function, you probably got room four.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of
as a leader of the study.
Well, I think we all do, you know, because we're all leaders in here, or we wouldn't be here. You know, you think about it. You know, all I do is facilitate meetings, you know, just like Lee does when she has the tickies, and just like Cap did this for how many years, Cap? 40-some years, you know?
20,
yeah. I mean, so to take on that responsibility, you have to be serious about your relationship with God, because it's a big responsibility, and it's a lot of work.
And there is a lot of protection that goes with it.
Yeah.
Like, let's say primitive man. Mm-hmm. They have maybe one seraphim for 100
people. Yeah.
You know, two seraphim for 1,000 people.
Yeah.
But as you progress in your mind, you know how to love and you know how to search for God.
So you said probably two cherubim and two seraphim.
We definitely have two seraphim and two cherubim assigned to us if you reach the third.
Just me?
Yes, just you.
You know, because the other day,
if you're at the third second.
Well, the cherubims outdo the record.
They
keep the record.
One's always on duty. If one's in rest mode, the other takes over. So basically, you have a seraphim and a cherubim attending to you constantly, 24 hours a day. Even though you have four, two of them may be at rest, recharging. The other two.
And you know why they keep that record? Because inches of days.
Mm-hmm. Now,
when they make that decision, they will always record.
On our website, Atlanta Urantia Study Group, I wrote a little poem about the seraphim and cherubim. It's called Whisper Song.
Okay.
I wrote it for Diane's daughter.
Okay.
It's over on the right-hand side. You can pull it up sometime. It's an interesting little thing. But it's a great little ditty to teach your kids and stuff. You know?
Okay.
So.
But there are also a lot of student visitors from other planets that come to observe.
Constantly.
Yeah.
You would think that they would be fascinated by the Urantia groups.
You would think
they would know about, you know, the revelation here on this planet.
I'm sure that's
one of the big things they want to see is the different study groups.
Should I make more tea?
Well, if something's missing, you'll know where it's going.
They're not drinkers.
All right, let's keep.
Did you used to joke at the Florida students of the Urantia Sabre conferences? And we had like 100 people that would come every year, and we used to joke that they wanted to get together. You know, our just wanted to hang out and party.
Yeah.
And so they made us come so that they could get together and talk.
Yeah, maybe so.
And it was like a natural high. Everybody's got this big smile, and we all just, it was this real wonderful experience.
You have to admit, the meetings, both online and in person, are fulfilling. And you get done, you feel like you've spent your time well, you feel like you're spiritually fulfilled after each one. You know. So It must do something to us, not only spiritually, but physically, if you think about it. It's got to be a positive experience.
Well, what it does, it just vibrates you different frequency. Mm-hmm. It's just when you hit something with its truth, you know, and it resonates, it starts resonating with you.
Yeah.
And it's healthy resonation.
Yeah.
You know, it'll prop up your image.
Yeah.
What is it that they say about the brain power of a group? It's you know, for example, if there's three of us here, that doesn't mean there's the brain power of three.
It's exponential.
Exponential.
Yeah. All right. The oldest inhabited world of Satania, world number one, is ANOVA, which is one of the 44 satellites revolving around the enormous dark planet, but exposed to a differential light of three neighboring suns. ANOVA is in an advanced stage of progressive civilization. Okay.
Oh, let me know. Let us own a system of planets.
Mm-hmm.
This planet has their four stars in the system.
Yeah.
And they revolve around each other. And there's a planet somewhere in the mix.
Yeah, of those 44.
Around two of those suns.
Right.
So there's a system of four stars, four suns. So when they mention here that this planet has two neighboring suns,
neighboring
light.
Yeah.
So but they're saying this is quite pretty odd to what they're accustomed to seeing with the telescopes.
Yeah.
It's normally one sun with planets.
Planets around it.
But this one is like four suns close together.
Yeah.
And one planet somewhere there in the midst of these four suns.
Now wouldn't it be interesting, George, if they found that through a telescope?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly like it's described here in the book. That
they found it something through the telescope.
Yeah. That's interesting. Okay, the planetary life. Which way you want to go? Let's go to the right. Linda, do you want to take the next section?
Sure. The universes of time and space are gradual in development. The progression of life, terrestrial or celestial, is neither arbitrary nor magical. Cosmic evolution may not always be understandable, predictable, but it is strictly non-accidental. The biologic unit of material life is the protoplasmic cell, the communal association of chemical, electrical, and other basic energies. The chemical formulas differ in each system, and the technique of living cell reproduction is slightly different in each local universe, but the life carriers are always the living catalyzers who initiate the primordial reactions of material life. They are the instigators of the energy circuits of living matter.
Okay, let's hold up and think about that for a minute.
That's a mouthful.
The biologic unit. So, basically, the life carriers have taken a basis of DNA or physical matter, and they experiment it and add it and change it and that sort of thing to make it for each and every planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that we know from a previous study that this is an experimental life planet. So every 10th planet, they're allowed to make modifications or changes,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we are. So we may have something unusual about our planet that no other planet's like, because they've made a modification for us. So that means the nine next planets, or the nine other planets of that 10 group, may be totally different from us, biologically. But we all have basically the same chemical and same techniques to create us, right? As mortal beings.
So actually what they do is they got a little lab with them, and they splice in the genes.
Yeah, they tweak it.
Tweak the DNA.
Yeah.
And if some animal is too big and powerful, they wipe it out.
Yeah. I believe it was the Adam and Eve paper. They talk about Adam and Eve experimenting with plant life and stuff before they came to Earth, even. Just trying to prepare themselves for what they would find on our planet. So, really, we're a big...
That didn't work for them too long.
No, it didn't. But we're really a big lab, if you think about it, the whole universe.
And I
they have
to interfere occasionally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you intend to
interfere now, I wish it would.
Well, they cannot interfere nine planets, only 10.
One in ten. And now, y'all remember, though, too, once they've implanted life, they can't modify it.
That's it.
They can't interfere at all. So all they can do is sit back and watch and see what changes they've made, see the result of the changes. Now, they can't go back and change anything to make it better. They have to live with whatever we got. And that's what happened on our planet. Yeah, we have to live. Because you remember that we've had, you know, they talk about
how somebody responsible.
Well, they had talked about in the book.
I mean, you know, somebody had to come up with that scheme.
Yeah. They talk about in the book how the reason we have so much trouble with disease and stuff was some of these modifications they made. You know, and then Adam and Eve defaulted. So the things that Adam and Eve's blood would have corrected from the modifications, we didn't get enough of. So we still are dealing with,
that's right,
with diseases.
Those cattle got in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think each planet being constructed differently, you know, even if we weren't a decimal planet, we would be different from
we would
the
be.
Next one, because
yeah.
It wouldn't be exactly the same type of planet.
Yeah, but under the dot, we are true. And it's all creation.
But, you know, because this planet has a certain amount of oxygen, and we're carbon-based instead of maybe silicon-based,
yeah.
You know, different characteristics of a planet determine what
some
type
is
of
water
life
planet, some is dry planet, some is water
yeah.
planet.
And if you think
some
about
has
it,
some has air, some doesn't. Some
well,
has a little bit of air.
Sure.
And with so many different variations, it's almost unlimited what they can come up with.
So I think every planet is different anyway.
So yeah. what about Anunnakis?
Huh?
Anunnakis, the ones which were giants came to this planet. And tweak our...
The Sumerians.
Sumerians.
Oh,
the Anunnaki.
Oh, I got you.
You know, ancient aliens.
Ancient aliens.
I
think the only ancient aliens... That
they were tweaking.
I think the only ancient aliens we have to worry about on this planet are the ones that were sent here by the administration of this universe. Okay? I think there is no such thing as an alien in the sense that we are all children of God. So... Even if they were born on another planet, they're our brothers and sisters. They're just a makeup that's different from us. So I don't think there's anything in the universe that will do us harm, to be honest. Because we are still controlled by whom? The reign of Michael.
We are controlled.
You know, as long as we're not in rebellion,
we
are controlled.
We are we're still in rebellion because Lucifer was not dealt with.
That's true. But
so we're still in rebellion.
We're not really. But the rebellion ended... on Mount Hermon with Christ. The rebellion ended there. The judgment has not taken place.
Judgment didn't take
place. That we,
place.
As
yeah,
of the printing of the book.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of time has gone, well, to us, a lot of time has gone by.
They may have had the first.
Well, let me put it there. Yeah,
but
judgment.
The results of the
bitter results. Judgment was made.
Yeah.
The Lucifer still exists.
Yeah. The results of the rebellion, we're still paying for here.
Yeah,
you're right. We are.
And we're so lost.
So we still basically under the rebellion.
Not really.
Well, the circus.
Well, only
still
when
are in quarantine.
Only
we're
basically.
Still in quarantine.
Oh.
We're still under quarantine.
We're under quarantine.
Yeah. But as far as all out rebellion, that's been squelched pretty much completely.
Well, we still don't have no sovereign.
Yeah, we do.
He's not. The Melchizedek is sovereign of this planet.
Yeah, but he's just a vicegerent of Christ Michael. Christ Michael is our planetary prince.
Right now.
And
Calicasta, he's where?
In prison.
Well,
he's kind of running around.
Yeah.
He's not in prison. He's just don't function.
Yeah, Lucifer
and
Satan.
He's not presiding.
Yeah.
Calagastia.
He's not. He's impotent.
He's stripped of power.
Yeah.
Unless
he's still here.
Once someone wants it. That's right.
If you seek out Calagastia,
hey,
look
he's
out.
Not in jail.
He's still around.
He's there. Available for you.
Yeah.
But he can't do any harm unless you.
Yeah, he do. He do.
Unless
look at our
system. Unless you want him to, you can't.
That's
well,
what I'm saying. We
all
have
the people in government, they probably hook up with Calicasta.
I don't know. You never know.
I won't give my opinion on that.
It's getting worse.
We won't get into politics.
Yeah, let's move on.
We better stick with religion. Level.
Yeah. I learned that lesson this week.
any can of worms you want to. Throw it all out there.
It's a lot of worms.
Yeah, a lot of worms.
We'll
be punching each other.
I doubt that in this room.
All the worlds of a level system disclose unmistakable physical kinship. Nevertheless, each planet has its own scale of life, no two worlds being exactly alike in plant and animal endowment. These planetary variations in the system life types result from the decisions of the life carriers. But these beings are neither capricious nor whimsical. The universes are conducted in accordance with law and order. The laws of Nevadon are the divine mandates of Salington, and the evolutionary order of life in Satania is in consonance with the evolutionary pattern of Nevadon.
So everything is in control, right?
Yeah, they don't just make really bizarre creatures just for the heck of it.
Yeah, they're not just throwing it against the wall and see how it comes out, you know? So.
There's a pattern.
Yeah.
Pattern.
Evolution is the rule of human development, but the process itself varies greatly on different worlds. Life is sometimes initiated in one center, sometimes in three, as it was on Urantia. On the atmospheric worlds, it usually has a marine origin, but not always. Much depends on the physical status of a planet. The life carriers have great latitude in their function of life initiation.
So did y'all catch that? So it doesn't have to have water. A lot of them do.
That's a fascinating sentence.
That is
said that there were three.
Yeah. We'll find out more about that coming up.
Yeah.
That's interesting that on a planet with an atmosphere.
Yeah, it would make it, how would you implant life in just an atmospheric condition rather than something.
Or a non-atmosphere.
Same way like there's a
planet. If you were them, you'd know.
I guess we would, wouldn't it?
Same way like volcanoes under the ocean floor.
Could be.
It's full of life.
Could be lava as far as we know. Stone people. Yeah. Who knows? Okay.
Stone people.
Well, I mean,
we've seen to be that.
We're carbon-based.
Well, I have met people that are pretty stiff about their beliefs.
True.
And have a heart of stone.
That's right.
In the development of planetary life, the vegetable form always precedes the animal and is quite fully developed before the animal patterns differentiate. All animal types are developed from the basic patterns of the preceding vegetable kingdom of living things. They are not separately organized. The early stages of life evolution are not altogether in conformity with your present-day views. Mortal man is not an evolutionary accident. There is a precise system, a universal law, which determines the unfolding of the planetary life plan on the spheres of space. Time and the production of large numbers of a species are not the controlling influences. Mice reproduce much more rapidly than elephants, yet elephants evolve more rapidly than mice. The process of planetary evolution is orderly and controlled. The development of higher organisms from lower groupings of life is not accidental. Sometimes evolutionary progress is temporarily delayed by the destruction of certain favorable lines of life plasm carried in a selected species. It often requires ages upon ages to recoup the damage occasioned by the loss of a single superior strain of human heredity. These selected and superior strains of living protoplasm should be jealously and intelligently guarded when once they make their appearance. And on most of the inhabited worlds, these superior potentials of life are valued much more highly than on Urantia.
Okay, so that gives you a whole different concept of eugenics, doesn't it? Because, they basically plan evolution. And as intelligent humans, we should be planning our own evolution of our own species. So we should try to encourage the best groups of human beings, the most intelligent, the most spiritual, the most versatile, the most strong to reproduce. And discourage groups that are inferior, and not doing anything for the planet, And that's a hard pill to swallow. I don't care what anybody says.
That means that Hitler was justified.
Every group of people that's tried to do that ends up in a world of trouble. Any way you look at it. So
on a regular planet, it's
lot of it's been accomplished by the planetary prince and then
Adam and Eve. Yeah.
Upstep, you know, all the races. And
kind of like that.
It is.
And we don't have anyone to tell us.
Nobody
We can kind of discern through science, you know, what just like you can with animal husbandry.
Yeah.
Only to a point, but.
Well, we mishandled it.
Oh, yeah.
We totally mishandled it.
Genetics has a terrible name because.
Because we don't know how to handle it ourselves. That's exactly right. If we have an Adam and Eve or a planetary prince that was visible, that could give us instructions on how to do this, it would be a thing.
Whenever we've attempted it on a societal level,
then we wouldn't have no religion. Because
it's handled by those who are self-serving and self-interested, not to improve the life of the future inhabitants of the planet, but to improve their own lives at that time.
Sounds like politics, huh?
Yes, it
does. You
don't have to have perfect genes.
Yeah.
No, then if Adam and Eve was functioning, if Calicaster was still Prince.
Well, yeah. So you could be a genius and still be
we wouldn't have to have a religious.
Not really right.
No,
because we would have a connection to the God direct.
Yeah.
So,
what do you do with it?
You know, we just, I'm son of God, here's my father, and we talk, and I don't need no religion. I don't need no priest.
Yeah. So we're kind of flailing around.
You know, I can remember years ago at several conferences, your answer conferences, where eugenics was a major topic. There was a great deal said about it. I remember one at Snowmass, that was the case. There was a lot, and several others. But in recent times, I don't think there's been as much emphasis on that as there used to be.
What was the most popular subject earlier in the 30s, 50s, 60s, that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
But we've just kind of lost interest in it altogether now.
Maybe it's almost impossible to deal with right now.
Well, there's less than 1% difference.
But if you think about it, personally, we can deal with it in some ways. If someone in your family is gifted intelligently, gifted artistically, gifted spiritually, whatever, you know, you should do everything that you can to encourage them to have children so that those gifts are passed on to future generations, you know, because really that's what Adam and Eve were supposed to do. And we've kind of missed out on that a lot.
But right now it's really opposite, you know.
Yeah,
it's opposite. The intelligent people, they just...
I know. The intelligent people stop reproducing because they realize the trouble with
just have one or two children, that's it.
Well, I mean, what is good if you can bring the food, you know, if you don't have enough food for planet.
It's not just about genetics. Education, is more important. Really.
Did you say what is?
Genetics. I mean, there's less than 1% difference between all of us in our DNA.
Yeah.
We're not really even that far removed from apes when you get down to it,
percentage-wise,
of our DNA.
Yeah.
So what's important is education and all of us striving to be the best we can be.
That's right.
Yeah, but there's so much all these the government industry, governments, secret societies, they throw in the monkey wrench to that. Because they're feeding us with poisons, they degrading our DNA, degrading our capacity of think.
Well, that still goes on today, you know. The military is
under the pressure.
Test ground for everything that they can come up with. They still are, you know. And when you sign up, you don't have a choice about the matter anymore. You sign away your life when you sign that piece of paper. I did it myself, you know, and they gave us stuff that if I'd have known the result of it, there's no way in the world I'd let them do certain things to me. But, you know, that's the price you pay in society, you know. And the thing we can do is correct our future by correcting our government, making it more people-friendly, you know. And that's all you can do. Well, there's always hope. We're going to reach light and life. The question is, how far it takes us to get there?
Not that lifetime.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going. Now, let me tell you how this works. We just normally just go around the room one way or another. If you want to read, you can. You don't have to read.
She's going to read.
Okay, if you want to read, you're welcome to read.
We read one page.
We read one page. We do it two different ways. At night times, we use a section. During the day, we just start at the page and read the whole page. So if you want to start with this section and go down to about the last paragraph, that's fine.
That last sentence where it says the superior potentials of life are valued much more highly than other worlds.
Yeah.
I guess that's just everyone on this planet is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Not really valuing the higher types of humans.
Yeah.
Because
we really don't. We don't put enough stock in our gifted youth, you know, when they're very intelligent or are very, if they have a special skill, like a musical skill or artistic skill or even a mathematical skill, that sort of thing. But
I think, you know, like the angels and the midwares, they do value this planet because they understand.
Yeah,
but they don't make no oil cheaper.
But
don't you think we intentionally try to equalize everybody?
We do.
We try to make everybody equal.
And they're not.
No, they're
not even close. Not even close.
Well, no.
Hold on a second. I think that it's particularly important for us not to assume that our judgments, or if you will, our Western civilization judgments, are necessarily the correct ones that they're talking about in this book. We value certain attributes, certain qualities, because of our society and because of the way we are structured. I think it would be very easy for us to say that it is unfortunate that in India or in China, for example, female children are looked down on. They are a detriment to the family unit. They are a weight on society. Their contributions are considered to be unimportant, negligible.
Yeah,
we find offensive.
Yeah, it's pathetic.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yet here we were just talking about how we try and make everybody equal, and that was considered to be a negative. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have to be very careful in making these judgments. They're not making these judgments based on our interpretation
right.
or our society.
Yeah.
They might very well be talking about someone who is genetically predisposed to being more spiritually in tune, to go back to what you were saying, rather than someone who is intellectually far superior, able to process more information, reach better conclusions, and yet have that heart of stone that we were mentioned in passing or in jest before. So we don't really know what the qualities are that they're talking about.
Well, we were just talking about this last week in our meeting about talking about the thought adjuster. It doesn't take intelligence to be more spiritual.
No.
It really doesn't. So maybe the qualities they're really talking about are something totally different than we even know how to measure. You know, but I think the thing more, instead of making everyone equal, I think we ought to strive to make everyone individual, you know, because each one of us has different talents and each one of us has a thought adjuster. So that thought adjuster takes the talents we come with and blossoms from that. And what we need to stress for people to be is special, be individuals. You know, and no two people are really alike. I don't care how much you try to put them up. You can all go to the same school or the same things, but you're going to take something totally different away every single person.
You know why? Because everybody here or feel a thought adjuster differently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it's a part of God. Mm-hmm. I mean, same to everybody, but each one is going to communicate differently.
Yeah, that's right.
I think if you give everyone an equality and opportunity, then you'll be able to see more of what they can accomplish.
Yeah.
And so many people just never get the opportunity to blossom.
Yeah.
Their lives are
well, it's
tragic.
Hard. Yeah, it's hard when you have to struggle to feed, produce every meal. You know, I mean, there are certain disadvantages any way you look at it. You know, I mean, there's people around this world that worry about if they're going to have enough water to drink that day, you know. And so in a situation like that, it's hard to see anything that's positive in the world. So maybe it's more our responsibility to make sure that people are fed, people are clothed, people can eat, that sort of thing. I think that's our social responsibility. Think of all the waste and potential in countries that may have these young children that could be geniuses, could come up with cures for diseases and everything else, and they never get that opportunity because they can't hardly survive physically. You know, it's sad.
Yeah, but then they go to this country where they start surviving, and they figure out carburetor which runs 100 miles per gallon, and they get killed.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So, I mean, where is the value?
Yeah. Well, let's keep going.
Children to God, individually seek money, and that's what he really cares about.
You ready, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Planetary physical types. There is standard and basic pattern of vegetable and animal life in each system. But the life carriers are oftentimes confronted with the necessity of modifying these basic patterns to conform to the varying physical conditions which confront them on a numerous world of space. They foster the generalized system type of motor creature, but there are seven distinct physical types as well as thousands upon thousands of minor variants of these seven or extended differentiations. First, atmospheric types, second, elemental types, third, gravity types, fourth, temperature types, fifth, electric types, energizing types, and last one is unnamed types.
We could spend days just discussing those seven topics, but I'm not going to say anything about that because, your imagination could run wild just talking about each type of possible beings, out there. So that's what I'm saying. Aliens, to me, are non-existent, because you think about it, if all these are our brothers and sisters, it doesn't matter what type you are or what type of human you are as long as you're human, right? So,
I said earlier, when we talk about aliens, we talk about people coming here in spaceships.
Yeah.
When the Son of God came to our planet about 200,000 years ago, they came. They came as in transport.
Yeah, seraphim.
It was controlled and managed.
Yeah.
As a universe operation.
Right.
Not as an ad hoc guy coming on a spaceship from somewhere with his own agenda.
They talk about those ships.
Yeah. And I don't know how much that is actually, if you think about it, allowed to travel from planet to planet in a spaceship and mess around with the human population in that space. Because we think of, when we talk about things like that, we think that the universe, our planet, has no government. Planetary government. And we do. We're controlled by Salvington.
Right.
And what happens on this planet and what happens between the planets is controlled by them. And I don't think they would allow that to happen.
So we don't have to worry about Klingons.
We don't have to worry about Klingons.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Huh?
I wish they were really in more control than they seem to be because mankind seems to be
let's think of a Klingon for a second.
Yeah.
That world that they're coming from, they have their planetary prince there,
have
Adam and Eve there.
Yeah.
They have no purpose for them to leave there to come here.
Yeah.
Because not like we are in quest of knowledge where we don't know where we're from.
Well, they might need education.
But they have access.
The other thing is, too, reading the papers on the mansion worlds, we learned that you can only travel to planets and earn space. If you have not earned that space, you wouldn't be traveling to that planet in the first place. It's just not allowed.
You got a membrane, it'll bunch you right back.
You cannot get a transport to another planet if you have not earned that space. So,
well, the point they're making, somebody does to alter it in a spaceship and come here with their own agenda that's not managed by
Salvington?
Celestial beings.
Yeah.
I would say that's not allowed.
No.
We keep forgetting about these distances. The nearest planets are millions of miles. The nearest star is millions of light years.
Yeah.
And no human being from any planet, anywhere in the universe, can get very far in a lifetime.
No.
And so, and even if you, if a person was put in an incubator of some
cold
sort,
storage,
kept alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just impractical.
Right.
And that's the way it was made and intended.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're not going to have visitors from other stars.
You don't want to go check the garden, the little toddlers moseying through the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it.
It makes good movies and TV, but it's not reality.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, let's keep going.
The Saturnian system contains of all these types and numerous intermediate groups. Also, some are very sparingly represented. Atmospheric types. The physical differences of the world and global habitation are chiefly determined by the nature of the atmosphere. Other influences which contribute to a planetary differentiation of light are also minor. The present atmospheric status of Urantia is almost ideal for the support of breathing type of man, but a human type can be so modified that it can live on both the super atmospheric and the sub atmospheric planets. Such modifications are also extended to animal life, which differs greatly on the various inhabited spheres. There is a very great modification of animal odors on both sub and the super atmospheric world. Of the atmospheric types of Saturnia, about 2.5% are sub-breezers, about 5% super-breezers, and over 91% are mid-breezers, altogether accounting for 98.5% of the Saturnia world.
I wonder what they mean by super-breezers.
I don't know.
They can breathe in thin atmospheres.
Yeah.
Like Mars.
So.
Like a Mars. I mentioned it here.
Beings such as Urantia races are classified as mid-breezers. You represent the average of typical breathing order of mortal existence. If intelligent creatures should exist on a planet with atmosphere similar to that of your near neighbor Venus, they would belong to the super-breather group, while those inhabiting a planet with atmosphere as thin as that of your outer neighbor Mars would be denominated super-breathers.
Does anyone know what kind of an atmosphere Venus has?
It's
thick. Thick gas. Yeah.
It's
so
CO2.
Thick.
Yeah. It's very dense. Really, they don't know. That's what they're telling us.
And these guys would know better than science.
Well, think about it. They're saying this before we ended up a probe.
That's right.
To Venus.
And they won't reveal unearned knowledge to us. Revelation. But we do good to get what we have.
They gave us this back in the 20s.
Yeah.
When we didn't even have the space program.
Yeah, we.
To know
that. But what have you conceived of?
We don't have no space program.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody does have a space program. But they don't tell us what it is.
So what I'm saying is that before we learned that Mars had thin atmosphere or Venus had thick atmosphere,
yeah,
we learned that in the 70s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they change it every year.
What's that?
Mars?
We knew that Venus had a thick atmosphere and that Mars had a thin one, and it's fairly simple. You cannot see the surface of Venus.
Right.
Therefore, the atmosphere is interfering and is thick.
Right.
But there are no clouds obscuring anything on Mars. You
right.
can see all of the surface of Mars, so that atmosphere is thin.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Maybe that's
We've landed on Mars. We know.
Oh, yeah.
We know that.
We were talking about unearned information.
We were talking about back in the
2030s.
So,
they knew that. 1800s.
Yeah. Well, one of the determining factors of the book, guy that does cosmic studies and stuff came up with was the fact that the Hubble telescope was invented back in the 20s or 30s, and I believe, that's one of the reasons we were given the book back then, because we were about to
on the verge
of discovering some major accomplishments in our history. So that's that would make sense. You have to think about it. Okay, let's keep going.
If mortals should inhabit a planet devoid of air like your moon, they would belong to the separate order of non-believers. This type represents a radical and extreme adjustment to the planetary environment and is separately considered. Non-believers account for the remaining 1.5% of satanic elements. Elemental types. This differentiation has to do with the relation of mortals with water, air, and land, and there are four distinct species of intelligent life as they are related to these habitats. Urantia rexes are of the land of order, are land order. It is quite impossible for you to envisage the environment which prevails during the early ages of some worlds. These unusual conditions make it necessary for the evolving animal life to remain in its marine nursery habitat for longer periods than on those planets which very early provide a hospitable and atmosphere environment. Conversely, on some worlds of supervision, when the planet is not too large, it is sometimes expedient to provide for mortal types which can readily negotiate atmospheric tests. These air navigators sometimes intervene between the water and land groups, and they always live in a measure upon the ground, eventually evolving into land dwellers. But on some worlds, for ages, they continue to fly even after they have become planetary beings.
Okay, you can stop there. We'll pull that somewhere else. Let me restart.
I'm sorry. I wish we could fly.
Yeah, really.
They must be nice. They must have very little gravity.
If we were, we wouldn't have the better planes, airplanes.
We wouldn't need them.
Well, it also makes you wonder if these types of beings are the mammals they were talking about that were similar to bats, doesn't it?
The bats, yeah.
Yeah.
So, going back to the super breathers, they wouldn't be breathing oxygen.
Yes. No, they would be breathing, they say somewhere else, I think in this paper.
They said on the moon it would be super breathing.
Yeah, they can breathe other gases besides just oxygen. So they may
be argon.
Yeah, argon.
Chlorine is a perfect analogy to oxygen.
Yeah.
And everything else has to be different too. But nonetheless, you could have a chlorine atmosphere and that.
They base the life that they're going to put on the planet based on what the planet provides.
Right.
As opposed to raw materials.
That's right.
And if you think about the Navy SEALs have developed years ago an ability to breathe fluid underwater.
Yeah.
They just return you to the state that you were when you were an embryo.
You know, it's in orbit.
It's like like you were a baby. You breathe the fluid, and you get the oxygen from the fluid.
Yeah.
Now it's real uncomfortable to go from that back again. I'm sure.
I guess.
Yeah, but
take that first breath.
Yeah, take that first breath. But it just shows you that it is possible. Right. So it wouldn't take that much modification.
You know, and the SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial, they keep looking for a planet exactly like this one, thinking, well, this is the only type of planet that can host.
Or they will give for a radio signal.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it may be totally something totally different, right?
And I don't know if it's in this paper or not, where they say that
I guess I got one pretty close.
Very close.
What does that mean?
Pretty close?
What does it mean? What is very
a
close
few,
to
a
them?
Billion light years.
Billion light years.
Well, yes, and what that would mean is that if they're non-breathers, that means that there's next to no atmosphere.
Right.
And they might be in the water. In
next,
liquid.
Yeah. Would there be any need or use on their part for radio signals?
Because there's an atmosphere. It's radio signal is based on an atmosphere. It bounces back off the upper layer. So you want this radio into your atmosphere.
But you can. Of course, signals can also go into space.
Right.
You don't have to have an atmosphere to have radio. But there are... My point was that the the concept of a non-breathing human is so bizarre to us that the other strictures that helped us create radio or created the need for radio or a use for radio might not even exist on that planet.
Yeah, that's true. It may not.
Maybe they can communicate.
Well, they say that the non-breathers, they have installed electrical insulation that they use to divert meteorites that come into their planet.
But also, since we're quarantined,
They may be too. I mean, that's okay. Very much a possibility. Since we've been
quarantined, yeah, I believe they block. We got a lot of stuff.
They could be blocking everything.
Remember, Jesus opened the.
Possibly,
yeah.
So
that's right. It may not be getting out.
I'm embarrassed when I think about how much they say our TV signals go out for all. I mean, that's embarrassing.
They jump on TV.
Beverly Hillbillies.
I know. I didn't do it. Hee-haw.
Or presidential debate.
Well,
that would be
a joke. Anyway, what's even worse than that is think of the quality of the TV that's out there right now. 90% of our TV at night is about death and violence and killing and maiming. You think about it. Serial killers, people that are killing other people. We're fascinated with this on TV. It's one show after another all night long. So if they take all the percentage of these shows and anybody actually watches them out there, don't think we're the most violent people in the universe.
Well, you're right.
They
won't get them for the next million years anyway.
Yeah.
Look at the constantly have a war. Four or five wars.
Oh, yeah. Constantly.
I think the fact that we don't have a government here, a spiritual government, visible, that's why we're so curious about what's happening outside.
That's right.
Of us who know this information now, we have information that we don't have to go looking for that evidence.
Yeah.
So those who are not in the know are still doing that.
Yeah.
Other planets that are in the know, like we are from, we're out there. No need to come here to verify that we're here.
Yeah.
They know.
We would be more of a curiosity than anything else
because we are so
cut off and barbaric.
You know what is interesting?
The animals in the zoo.
Yeah.
How you explain the children?
The children
what's the evil if there is no evil?
Well,
they are in the environment where there's no evil.
Well,
how you explain the evil exists somewhere?
We study something like the Lucifer.
You send them up.
Well, the Lucifer Rebellion teaches us that. What's evil, what's rebellion, what's actually sin, you know? Something can be evil without being sin.
Right.
You know? And you can be in error without being
sin.
Right? So, really the only sin is rebellion against God. That's the only sin. All the rest of it's either error or evil. And we've got some pretty evil people.
You have to
think about it.
You have to have a direct knowledge that God exists.
Right.
Even if you don't have a direct knowledge God exists, it's still error.
Yeah, it is.
It's not.
Well, if you think about it, the Urantia book states it as this. If you live in error and evil your whole life and you don't survive, your life is an illusion.
Yeah.
Because nothing is real.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Only thing that's real is your relationship with God and your relationship to other people.
That's true.
That's the only thing that's real. The rest of it's just. As they say,
it's just theater. It's
temporary
just
association.
Yeah. Huh?
Just temporary show. Association.
That's right. Okay, let's keep moving here. George, you want to take it from me?
I'm going to skip today.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to put it on the big screen.
You don't have to. I skip some days myself, so that's fine.
Did we leave off where it's...
It is both amazing and amusing.
It is both amazing and amusing to observe the early civilization of a primitive race of human beings taking shape, in one case in the air and treetops, and in another amidst the shallow waters of sheltered tropic basins, as well as on the bottom, sides, and shores of these marine gardens of dawn races of such extraordinary spheres. Even on Urantia, there was a long age during which primitive man preserved himself and advanced his primitive civilization by living for the most part in the treetops as did his earlier arboreal ancestors. And on Urantia, you still have a group of diminutive mammals, the bat family, that are air navigators. And your seals and whales of marine habitat are also of the mammalian order.
Isn't that interesting? So it makes you wonder, you have a little bit more respect for the bats and the mammals, you know, in the ocean. You know, you think, well, they could have been the ones that developed into the human race.
Yes, but did they have to say that we're on music?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they talk about music a lot.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
I'd rather make them laugh than cry.
I suppose.
Yes.
Maybe they class the presidential debates under humor.
Boy, I'll be glad in a couple of weeks.
Maybe and maybe not.
Maybe not.
We'll be fine. Maybe we'll have 4 years, three and a half years of peace.
Hey, which country are y'all moving to? So I don't
know. Or which country are you living in?
We've already voted, so yeah.
I had to. It's over for me.
So. Well, some of them ballots burned up in that airplane. They talked about a bunch of military people already voted. Oh, the airplane fell down and burned. Damn. Right. That's sad. Let's keep going.
In Satania, of the elemental types, 7% are water, 10% air, 70% land, and 13% combined land and air types.
Frogs.
But these modifications of early intelligent creatures are neither human fishes nor human birds. They are of the human and pre-human types, neither super fishes nor glorified birds, but distinctly mortal. Of course, what they mean by distinctly mortal for someone like that.
It reminds me of Star Trek, you know, and the walk around, the fish people are there. Everybody else.
Well, you can consider those beings mortal.
Yeah, really. They would be mortal.
Yeah, they might.
Well, I mean, if your soul doesn't look form, it's mortal.
Well, just y'all think about this. When we get to mansion worlds, if other beings are physically similar to what they were on their planet, then we're going to have a lot of adjustments.
Well, I think you would be. Yeah, because if we woke up and looked like a fish, we'd be a little upset, I think.
Well, think of all the adjustments we have.
Fish will look like fish.
You know?
Like glorified fish.
One of the things we have to learn is how to live with other species and other races. Right. On this planet, we got it made. We just have to worry about color. Right?
Shades.
When we get to the mansion worlds, we have to worry about physical types. Right. You know, mental types. One, two, and three brain. You know, of course, when they get to the mansion world, they'll all be equal, but they came from a one.
Yeah, but they'll start off being quite different.
That's right.
When you sleep next to octopus.
We got a lot to learn.
I've heard a rumor that dolphins are considered to be intelligent.
Older,
to a very high degree.
Very high degree.
Some people even argue that they have souls.
It could be that on other planets, they do develop into the sentient race.
They may be.
We're isolated when we first go up to the mansion world.
We're not just stuck in there.
For a very good reason.
We still fraternize with some of them. We see them and interact with other.
My roommate's a fish.
Maybe fish gonna beat you in chess, man.
Probably just because it'd be too much of a shock.
No more sushi for me. Okay.
That's just the kind of joke that would get you in trouble up there, you know.
I know.
The gravity types, by modification of creative design. Intelligent beings are so constructed that they can freely function on spheres both smaller and larger than Urantia, thus being in measure accommodated to the gravity of those planets, which are not of ideal size and density, like the moons of our planets in our solar system.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, something you mentioned, we were talking about a little while ago about kind of UFOs coming here. I mean, we send spaceships to Mars.
Yeah, we do.
So if there is actually life in this solar system apart from this planet,
yeah,
we could do that.
If they're advanced enough, we're not prohibited by being.
But that we are in our own. You think about it, system. Yeah, that's our earned space.
Right.
So maybe they're allowing us to do that just out of to see how far we'll go.
I'm saying
if there is life on
Venus
or something, and we don't know.
Yeah.
If there is, because they're saying that there could be.
See the physics.
That maybe if they're more advanced than we are, maybe they can send.
Maybe they're on a different plane of existence, too.
The point
like
is making.
Like
and physics works different if you get out of orbit. I mean, they already had to redo the math for satellites around the sun.
Now, they don't mention this, but they could very well be like the Midwayers. They could be outside our sight range.
Yeah.
And vice versa, we could be outside their sight range.
We will send
so now you see me, now you don't.
Yeah.
We will send internet man to Mars eventually. We will do that. Or even to Venus.
You think it would be intelligent?
Yeah, well, hopefully. But to send it to Alpha Centauri,
The tricky part of that, George, is finding somebody intelligent.
We don't know
the same. Exactly.
All right. Let's keep going.
Anyway, I mean, it's a possibility.
It is.
All right. Various planetary types of mortals vary in height. The average in Nevadon being a trifle under 7 feet. So we're short.
Yeah, we're shorter than
average.
Short. Yeah.
Some of the larger worlds are people with beings who are only about 2.5 feet in height. We're
tall.
Really, really short.
That makes us tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd have to be with a lot of gravity. Mortal stature ranges from here on up through the average heights on the average-sized planets to around 10 feet on the smaller inhabited spheres. In Satania, there is only one race under 4 feet in height. 20%, I wonder if they'll be short on the national worlds.
I don't know. It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't matter, but it would be interesting. I mean, I wonder if you'll see beings...
Oh, yeah.
The same small height range that they are on the
probably
so.
Yeah, I would think so. One thing's for sure, these 10-foot guys wouldn't fit in our airplanes.
Or the cars.
Well, that's true. They have some UFOs they captured, and they have a very small seat. And the where they sit, where the pilot sits, everything's very small.
They say there's only one race under 4 feet in height, Satania. So, 20% of the Satania inhabited worlds are people with mortals of the modified gravity types occupying the larger and smaller planets. The temperature types. It is possible to create living beings who can withstand temperatures both much higher and much lower than the life range of the Urantia races. Which they tell us how much.
Yeah.
There are 5 distinct orders of beings as they are classified with reference to heat regulating mechanisms. In this scale, the Urantia races are number 3. Okay. 30% of Satania worlds are peopled with races modified temperature types, 12% belonging to the higher temperature ranges, 18% to the lower, as compared with Urantians, who function in the mid-temperature group. I imagine there's it's a combination of all these things.
Yeah,
too.
It depends on your physical
atmosphere,
a lot of different things.
Just think of the number of the combinations and permutations you can get of all of these characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
You can have essentially an infinite number of different being types.
You can.
Temperature
really
types.
Absolutely.
And, whether they live on land or in the air.
Mm-hmm.
This next one, electric types. So, electric types. The electric, magnetic, and electronic behavior of the worlds varies greatly. There are 10 designs of mortal life, variously fashioned to withstand the differential energy of the spheres. These 10 varieties also react in slightly different ways to the chemical rays of ordinary sunlight. But these slight physical variations in no way affect the intellectual or the spiritual life. I wonder if some of them are like plants that come on for energy or something.
Yeah, they may be.
Of the electric groupings of mortal life, almost 23% belong to class number 4, the Urantia type of existence. These types are distributed as follows. Number 1, 1%. I don't really tell you what number 1 is.
No, explain it.
Number 1, 1%. Number 2, 2%. Number 3, 5%. Number 4, 23%. Number 5, 27%. Number 6, 24%. Number 7, 8%. Number 8, 5%. Number 9, 3%, number 10, 2%, and whole percentages. The energizing types. Not all worlds.
I want you to stop there, Lee, because you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a whole. You want to take it from there?
Sure.
The energizing types. Not all worlds are alike in the manner of taking in energy. Not all inhabited worlds have an atmospheric ocean suited to respiratory exchange of gases, such as is present on Urantia. During the earlier and the later stages of many planets, beings of your present order could not exist. And when the respiratory factors of a planet are very high or very low, but when all other prerequisites to intelligent life are adequate, the life carriers often establish on such worlds a modified form of mortal existence. Beings who are competent to affect their life process exchanges directly by means of light energy and the first-hand power transmutations of the master physical controllers.
Okay, I don't want to skip over this one. This is real interesting to me. In other words, they can get all their necessary energy to function. Not through food, not through eating water and food, but they get it through the master physical controllers through light energy. Isn't that kind of neat?
Yeah.
So you don't have to have food and water. Your existence is basically kept up by light energy itself, which is given to us by the master physical controller.
Plants basically
plants do the same
that.
Thing. Yeah, that's right.
So,
you know,
so now
green people. Yeah. You know, have a little green hair, little follicles up there against the light, you know.
Well, eventually we'll have bodies that are like that.
That's right. Yeah.
As we evolve and
become closer to spiritual.
There could be life on Mars.
Yeah.
There could be life on Mars. You know, we keep looking for water.
There could be.
Well,
there
I
could
think
be several possibilities.
We're going to eat only one thing, but it's going to taste whatever you have a taste for. So it's going to be altered.
Well, apparently,
so if you want a deer meat, you're going to have a deer meat.
Well, it sounds like on the first nature world, you eat food similar to what you're used to. In other words, because it would be...
there's an energy food.
Yeah, it's an energy food, but it would be similar to what we have on Earth with a taste. Because they don't want to make the change so drastic that we would be uncomfortable.
Mostly
chocolate, probably.
Water is water.
Starbucks.
Water
is water. Yeah.
But the more you go up in second dimension world, your body starts to change.
Yeah, you start to get retuned, and then you need less and less of the physical
substance. Your body gets lighter.
Yeah.
Lighter and lighter.
So you're not going to need physical substance.
The other interesting thing about that is there's no waste. So you won't have any bathrooms in heaven.
You won't have lots of time.
Anytime.
So in the planets where these beings are getting their energy directly from the sun, there's probably
There's no waste.
As we know it.
Yeah.
The digestive system.
Mm-hmm.
And it may work exactly like the plants. You know, when the plant takes in carbon dioxide, they release oxygen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be a similar thing that it releases some kind of chemical that's needed for that planet's sustenance, right? So it's recycled constantly. What a perfect system.
Mm-hmm.
generic source.
Yeah, but it needs water.
So yeah.
Now they
they
don't have about water here.
No, not necessarily. You don't have to have
plants
water.
Plants on this planet need water.
Well, plants on our planet does.
Simulation needs water.
Yeah, on our planet, but we don't know that that's the case anywhere else.
The atmospheric type of worlds need water.
Huh?
The atmospheric type of worlds, they need water.
Well, even
these guys don't need water.
Even on the mansion world, the plant life is just like here.
Yeah.
So it would need water to sustain
it. It's water.
Yeah, and they talk about on
lakes and
the capital of the lakes and the underwater irrigation system, that sort of thing, for all the foliage and stuff. So, you know, some things remain the same, even though they change. You know.
Well, there's a Maranta type of gas.
Gas
and
Maranta,
right.
We actually, breathe some kind of gas that's Maranta gas, too, but not exactly what we're used to. I guess they give us a breathing mechanism, so it's not that much of a yeah, it talks about we breathe
gases.
We breathe. Just so it's not that much of a change from our own mind. Probably as you progress, you do that.
I mean, they do have gases up there, but I'm just trying to remember.
Yeah, somewhere in the papers.
It's the system, not the specific waters.
Yeah.
He must have just read that.
Just remember. Okay, let's keep going.
There are six differing types of animal and mortal nutrition. The sub-breeders employ the first type of nutrition. The marine dwellers the second. The mid-breathers the third, as on your rancher. The super-breathers employ the fourth type of energy intake, while the non-breathers utilize the fifth order of nutrition and energy. The sixth technique of energizing is limited to the midway creatures.
You know, this sentence here, they don't talk a lot about how the midway creatures stay alive, but it does here.
The unnamed types. There are numerous additional physical variations in planetary life. A lot of these differences are wholly matters of anatomical modification, physiological differentiation, and electrochemical adjustment. Such distinctions do not concern the intellectual or the spiritual life.
That didn't the tree of life have something to do with it?
No, this is all controlled by the master physical controllers, which control energy, basically. So,
but the children of Adam and Eve actually were eaten off of tree of life.
Well, when they ate of the tree of life, that sustained it regenerated their physical bodies indefinitely.
And they were
so they wouldn't die. Yeah, as long as they ate of the tree and they were in the system circuit, they would never die. They'd go on.
And they were midwayers.
No, they weren't midwayers.
Because they
no,
you
the
could
midwayers,
see them, you could see them not.
No, the midwayers were the children of, there was two groups.
Their
of
children.
The
primary midwayers were
the children of
the sons of God.
Yeah, the 100, Caligaster 100. The secondary midwayers were the children of Adam and
son Eve.
Adamson and one of the descendants of the original Caligaster 100. Right.
So that they didn't come as entourage with anything?
No.
They were bred on this earth?
Yeah, the primary.
No, the primary.
The son of God
the
came.
Planetary prince told them to.
Yeah, to
mate.
Yes. That's the primary ones. The secondary came almost. Well, you would call it accident because they were planned by the celestial beings, probably. But they came when Adam
and
Eve.
They were surprised.
They were surprised. Yeah.
Surprise.
Adam, the secondary midwayers came as the children of Adam and Eve. The secondary midwayers really are the descendants of Adam. And Adam's son and Rada,
which was Adamite,
right?
Adamite, yeah.
Yeah, they were actually descendants of.
Both.
Yeah.
I understood that Caligaster, as soon as the planet is pronounced or registered as sentient, that is called, and the prince going to come in with the entourage.
He did.
The huge entourage.
The Caligaster 100.
The ships coming from everywhere. And
they didn't come in ships.
No, they came by
surface transport.
Surface transport.
Right. Yeah. And they all came from the same planet.
And I thought midwayers would come the different experts. No.
The midwayers, the first midwayers were the children of the Caligasta 100.
Right.
After the fall. Yeah. They weren't supposed to actually start doing that till later, and they jumped the gun when they went into rebellion.
Well, the rebellion just happened, so Satan actually...
Rebellion took place 250,000
Satan actually was the, like...
They arrived here 450,000 years ago, and the rebellion was 250,000 years ago.
Right.
And they weren't supposed to start reproducing the midwares till a later time. But they, when we went into rebellion, they immediately started having the midwares, the primary midwares.
Right.
Okay, and then...
The East did.
No.
That was later.
No, that was the Caligasta 100.
After that Luciferian rebellion.
No, after the Lucifer rebellion started.
So right. The breeding changed the characteristics.
Right.
Okay.
And then the secondary midwares didn't come until Adam and Eve, and that was only 37,800 years ago. Yeah, and there was 50,000 primary midwares.
Well, the secondary midwares are closer to us than the primary midwares.
Yeah, they're closer to our eyesight. Right. It's easier for them to make themselves visible to us than the primary midwares.
They can move the lamp or open the door.
Yeah, because they're closer to our physical being.
They want to roll away the tomb. Stolen for Jesus.
Most of the things that were accused of devils and demons were the midwares.
Secondary.
Because they had the ability to scare people.
Yeah. Well, they would scare us if we were sitting here and this being just appeared and said, oh,
yeah.
They did.
You can imagine the stories that went around. You know, you're sitting around the fire escape campfire, and this being appears before you, you know, and starts moving physical matter around. Yeah, it upsets you a little bit, you know.
It's full of tricks on you.
Yeah, you're...
They were very superstitious back then.
Well, they had to be. They had no choice. Can you imagine if just a roll call when every, I don't know, 1,000 years, all... dead people rise to the heavens.
Yeah, but they didn't see that. See, that's where people are.
They say some people.
They weren't able to see that because the
souls are going on.
They
souls,
saw
not the bodies.
Some fusion.
They said they would see the fusions when people would fuse with their thought adjusters. Yeah, but there's very few people who've done that.
That's
burning.
That's actually golden soul.
Elijah and Enoch and.
Those roll calls, you can see people raising from the grave.
And there's many people in New York City.
Comes from the New Testament, right? The story of Revelation and that kind of stuff. And it was supposed to, there was three ideas of that. The pre-apocalyptic, the post-apocalyptic, and the mid-apocalyptic, I think it is. And see, the story behind that is Jesus was going to call all the sleeping survivors, and they envision these people breaking up from their graves. The problem is, you don't need the old bodies.
Exactly.
Yeah. So when he had the roll call, they didn't see the beings being raised from the grave.
Well, I thought that there was somewhere in the book, like people got spooked because some people were able to see the energy.
No, the
maybe
only,
the energy,
only
you know?
Person that witnessed anything close to that would be John the Revelator, which was John Zebedee. And he wrote what he saw in Revelation. But it's so confused in the New Testament, you can't hardly make out what he's talking about. Mike, or something.
Oh, no, you can go by that.
Now, when you read the Urantia book, you can go back to it. You know exactly what they're talking about.
Puts it in order.
But it's hard to interpret even for somebody that's been reading.
Well, he made a roll call. Yeah. Jesus did.
Yeah.
And maybe that was his apostles, Gabriel did.
Yeah.
And apostles actually saw that, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the first thing he did on his resurrection, is he turned to Gabriel and said, please raise my, basically, sleeping survivors. Yeah.
Well, what he did after he talked to the evil on Mount
Hermon,
that's when he did that. And then he made change the law that mortal will lay only 3 days. No more roll calls. It will be 3 days.
No, you can still be a sleeper. If you don't make the third psychic circle, you still sleep until a roll call.
I thought every mortal on the earth.
You don't have to read about this.
This is very interesting. Until you make the third psychic circle and are assigned your own personal guardian, you don't rise on the third day. We wait and are risen in mass every millennium by a roll call. It's about every 1,000 years.
If you die.
If you die, yeah. But the thing of it is, they raise you in mass because you're in a different class of understanding. So you do them all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Okay? And when you're raised in mass like that, they have a whole crew of people there to take care of you. You know, where if you're raised individually, your thought adjuster immediately on the third period goes to the mansion world, your guardian angel goes there, and you're immediately risen from the dead. The thing is, though, if it's been 1,000 years or 3 years, you don't know any different.
No.
You have no memory of it.
Right.
So it really doesn't matter.
Time doesn't exist.
So.
Unless you don't like the crowd.
See, that's why I was.
So you worried? No, I'm not worried. I'm ready though.
As the people up north say, don't worry about it.
Forget about it.
Yeah, forget about it.
Listen, that's why I thought he'd change it. When Jesus was here, he changed that.
No. It's still the same. Every millennium.
And he also changed the.
It got modified slightly for those who were in the third circle.
Right.
Because prior to Moses, Moses didn't go over immediately. Yeah.
And those creeps, those midwives, they were present people.
Yeah.
He stopped that.
Now, did you hear what he said? That was true. He did change the people in the third psychic circle after the resurrection of Christ. That's when they started immediately
going over.
Yeah.
Well, not everyone. Those
not
those,
everyone.
I thought he said every mortal on the Urantia will lay only 3 days. And then
let's understand something clearly. Remember, those who are not in the third circle and above and below have one angel for 1,000 people.
Right.
Imagine the practicality of one of that person in that 1,000 went up.
Right.
The angel wouldn't leave to go receive that.
No.
That's why practically they have to wait until all of them
would
have died.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
So when that time comes, they all get there together.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a bureaucratic reason why it's every 1,000 years.
It's a practical purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a technicality.
It's a decimal system.
You got to have bureaucracy.
It's a decimal system.
The angels are the bureaucrats.
Right. If you don't have your personal angel, you can't go because you got to sit there waiting for the angel to finish what he's doing to come receive you.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's like circus coming to town, you know?
They
got to gear up for it. Because it's not one planet, it comes from all
people. It takes 2 or 3 weeks to get the paper.
Yeah, I haven't read that one.
Okay.
There it is.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue, shall we?
Yeah. Okay, let's
keep going. Number 3, worlds of the non-breathers. The majority of inhabited planets are peopled with the breathing type of intelligent beings. There are also orders of mortals who are able to live on worlds with little or no air. Of the Orvontan inhabited worlds, this type amounts to less than 7%. In Nevadon, this percentage is less than 3%. In all Satania, there are only 9 such worlds. There are so very few of the non-breather type of inhabited worlds in Satania because this more recently organized section of Proletidek still abounds in meteoric space bodies, and worlds without a protective friction atmosphere are subject to incessant bombardment by these wanderers. Even some of those comets consist of meteor swarms, but as a rule, they are disrupted smaller bodies of matter. Millions upon millions of meteorites enter the atmosphere of Urantia daily, coming in at a rate of almost 200 miles a second. On the non-breathing worlds, the advanced races must do much to protect themselves from meteor damage by making electrical installations which operate to consume or shunt the meteors. Great danger confronts them when they venture beyond these protective zones. These worlds are also subject to disastrous electrical storms of a nature unknown on Urantia. During such times of tremendous energy fluctuation, the inhabitants must take refuge in their special structures of protective insulation.
Can't you see a movie being made out of that? Just like so.
I know.
Yeah.
Life on the world of the non-breathers is radically different from what it is on Urantia. The non-breathers do not eat food or drink water as do the Urantia races. The reactions of the nervous system, the heat-regulating mechanism, and the metabolism of these specialized peoples are radically different from such functions of Urantia mortals. Almost every act of living aside from the reproduction differs, and even the methods of procreation are somewhat different.
Okay, that's good there,
Doc. Okay. On the non-breathing worlds, the animal species are radically unlike those found on the atmospheric planets. The non-breathing plan of life varies from the technique of existence on an atmospheric world. Even in survival, their peoples differ, being candidates for spirit fusion as opposed to just fusion. Nevertheless, these beings enjoy life and carry forward the activities of the realm with the same relative trials and joys that are experienced by the mortals living on atmospheric worlds. In mind and character, the non-breathers do not differ from any other mortal types. You would be more than interested in the planetary conduct of this type of mortal, because such a race of beings inhabits a sphere in close proximity to Urantia.
They just put that in there. That's just crazy.
Close, only a few million miles.
Yeah. A few million light years.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Number four. When one of the moons of one of the planets.
It could be in our solar system.
Could be.
One of the moons of one of those planets.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I think it actually states in the book that there are two possible planets in our solar system that are possible future inhabited planets, but that at this time only Urantia is inhabited in our solar system.
I don't either.
I read that before. I don't remember what it was. But they said that there are two possible planets that are maybe
Mars and Venus. Was Mars and Venus?
I don't remember. I don't know if they
Yes, they all inhibited.
Unless it was a moon.
Yeah.
But they don't have no own society.
Yeah.
That there are visitors coming in and stuff.
I don't remember if it was something along this line, but it's also in, you remember that?
Just drug stops, you know.
That paper I sent y'all last week from the website, the Master Universe Almanac. They have some of that stuff in this chart of the Master Universe Almanac that I sent everyone. And it may be in this that I read it. I'm not sure. I can't swear to it. But there's so much good information in that.
After we all go home, you find it in email.
Yeah, I was going to say, if everyone will make sure I have your email address. I don't have y'all's. I have Linda's, but I'll try to remember to send that chart to everyone again.
You send me email?
I'll send it to you. If you'll write it now, I'll send it to you. Lee, do you have his email?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can send it on here.
Yeah,
we have it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Four evolutionary will creatures. There are great differences between the mortals of the different worlds, even among those belonging to the same intellectual and physical types. But all mortals of will dignity are erect animals, bipeds. There are six basic evolutionary races, three primary, red, yellow, and blue, and three secondary, orange, green, and indigo. Most inhabited worlds have all of these races, but many of the three-brained planets harbor only the three primary types. Some local systems also have only these three races. The average special physical sense endowment of human beings is 12. Although the special senses of the three-brained mortals are extended slightly beyond those of the one and two-brain types. They can see and hear considerably more than the Urantia races. Young are usually born singly, multiple births being the exception, and the family life is fairly uniform on all types of planets. Sex equality prevails on all advanced worlds,
Male and female are equal in mind endowment and spiritual status. We do not regard a planet as having emerged from barbarism so long as one sex seeks to tyrannize over the other. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what does that say about us?
That means we're still in
space. Can you say that? I didn't catch you.
We don't. That means we're all still barbarians.
We're barbarians here on Earth because we do discriminate in many places against women.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what it says.
That's right.
Yep.
And I think that would go for against other races, against other religions, other people,
yes.
Period.
Small, big,
yeah. Big, large, anything.
But this is talking here specifically about
women, because yes. They have been put down so
yes.
Much on this.
Well, still they are the most important difference, because they can have all young.
Yeah.
Well, women are superior, but we don't teach all bad men.
Because the males are very fragile. Very sensitive.
Yeah. Fragile.
You gotta be strong, and because you gotta take care of male, he's fragile. Yeah.
So why don't you?
Very easily breakable.
No, you have to have something to work with.
Right. All right, this feature of creature experience is always greatly improved after the arrival of the material son and daughter. We have something to look forward to.
We've lost our materials.
Seasons and temperature variations occur on all sun-lighted and sun-heated planets. Agriculture is universal on all atmospheric worlds. Tilling the soil is the one pursuit that is common to the advancing races of all such planets.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's farming is about okay. Sunlight and sun-heated planets, maybe uh-huh. Insinuating that some
that's only life.
Planets that don't have sun, life yeah. Don't have sun.
Well, we know that the architectural field spheres are artificially heated and cooled.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have sunlight. To light them. They're light internal light. Right? So,
I don't know what planets here
but planets
but
apparently.
Evolutionary planets.
Evolutionary.
I wonder if there are some that.
There may
that
be.
Don't.
But they have to have sunlight or they don't generate any heat or electricity or light of their own.
True, but.
So they have to have light
could,
from somewhere.
It could be atmospheric light from the atmosphere or a neighboring sun or something.
Or they
sure.
May have a
but
free
it's still
energy.
Light.
Still light.
Yes.
Or they may have a free energy on the planet and just
or
let it up and heat it up and everything.
It's good to point out that all that's like a hole in the ground and then all the energy comes shooting up out of the hole.
Well,
okay.
Everything is possible.
Sure.
All that sentence says is that there are seasons and temperature variations on planets that have sunlight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That would be the case whether the planet was inhabited or uninhabited. Right?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there are some planets that are inhabited that don't have sunlight.
Yeah.
The sun is basically the energy source for
starlight. Call it sunlight or starlight.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, but y'all remember.
There are seasons and temperature variations on those planets.
Yeah, but y'all remember the master physical controllers can control the physical energy. So they can manipulate it to do anything that they need it to
do. Yeah, they can.
Remember, the seasons have nothing to do with whether there's a sun or not. It's the tilting of the axis of the planet. Seasons and temperature variations occur on all sun-lighted and sun-heated planets. And if it's sunlit, it has seasons and it has temperatures. Okay. Yeah. It's only going to happen if the planet,
seasons.
World, is tilted on its axis. So that as it
that
those
increases
are,
the variation, but it does not increase. It doesn't necessarily change.
As long as
the planets.
If there's a
our moon keeps going.
Constructed
planet.
They got their own light source. They got their own.
Seasons are caused by the
heat source and their own fauna. And we can see that
by the Earth.
Yeah. So they get their own
on its axis.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Some degrees.
That's right.
Of several. But you're still going to have cold or hot depending on how close
they get energy from universal.
Exactly.
We don't have a totally circular orbit.
Right.
If we're going to have an axis in circular orbit, and we also don't have an axis that is perfectly straight up and down in relation to the
plane of the rotation.
Exactly. And how many planets are likely to have that straight up and down axis and maintain it for eternity?
Okay, are we done grinding this axis?
Okay, mortals all have the same general struggle with microscopic foes in their early days, such as you now experience on your rancher, though perhaps not so extensive. The length of life varies on the different planets from 25 years on the primitive worlds to nearly 500 on the more advanced and older spheres. Human beings are all gregarious, both tribal and racial. These group segregations are inherent in their origin and constitution. Such tendencies can be modified only by advancing civilization and by gradual spiritualization. The social, economic, and governmental problems of the inhabited worlds vary in accordance with the age of the planets and the degree to which they have been influenced by the successive sojourns of the divine suns.
Okay, that basically tells us if we're to become more spiritualized, we're going to have to become more civilized. That's all there is to it.
Right.
And less barbarian.
Well, less barbarian.
Less barbarian. That's right.
You went in
there.
Well, let me think. 25 years lifespan to 500.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about 70 right now.
Yeah, 75.
That tells you where we are on the scale.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. There are a lot of countries, places where the life expectancy is 40 to 50 years still.
Okay.
What's intriguing at this point is to remember that our year is not necessarily anybody else's year.
That's right.
That's true.
They've got 365 days in our one cycle round the sun.
It may be just the one second on different.
I assume their
30 or 40 years might be
true, completely true. Yeah. I personally assume that this book is written with the idea of when they talk about years, they're talking about Earth years,
yeah.
Not about the years on a particular other planet. Yeah. Otherwise, it would be meaningless.
Now,
you're right.
Well, it might be meaningless, but it's also
it is meaningless. But they got to give us a reference.
There has to be.
Well, There has to be a reference.
But I use our reference.
Sure,
this is true. But the reference, in proportion to the civilization itself, to the inhabitant of that other world, whose year might be, say, 400 days, or it might be 800 days.
Or it might be 5,000.
It might be 5,000, right. Although that's an awfully long way out. That might not be one of those sunlit planets that has an atmosphere. Proportionally, I think it still would teach you the same lesson, because we have how many summers and how many winters do we live through, do we survive, and that has a bearing on how we look at life. Springtime comes, winter comes, and suddenly it sounds like a Simon and Garfunkel song, you know. And if they were only referring to our lives and our planet, our yearly cycle, it would not be proportional necessarily to that of another planet. I don't think that they're being quite that limiting.
Okay. I don't think it tells us. I think we have to make our own assumptions.
Yeah. Let's try to get to
the right time to give us the book.
Mind is the bestowal of the infinite spirit and functions quite the same as diverse environments. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
In
diverse environments. The mind of mortals is akin, regardless of certain structural and chemical differences, which characterize the physical natures of the willed creatures of the local systems.
Regardless of personal or physical planetary differences, the mental life of all these various orders of mortals is very similar, and their immediate careers after death are very much alike. But mortal mind without an immortal spirit cannot survive. The mind of man is mortal. Only the bestowed spirit is immortal. Survival is dependent on spiritualization by the ministry of the adjuster, on the birth and evolution of a mortal soul. At least there must not have been have developed an antagonism towards the adjuster's mission of affecting the spiritual transformation of the material mind.
And we just studied that one there. Let's stop there until next time. Since it's 4 o'clock.
It's a good idea. We'll never get through it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, let me stop the recording here real quick, y'all. Thank you for joining us. Please come see us again.
You know, there really is such a...